What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, trying to settle down here for a Monday edition. Fred and Ethan are so relieved, Sue. Sue is not in the studio this afternoon, but Fred just said it's a whole different monologue because minutes before, and you can relate to this because you've seen it happen, minutes before the show started, I could not find my headphones, Sue. And yeah, I know.
I'm sorry.
Yes. It's funny until you can't find the damn headphones.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then I'm searching everywhere. And I, Fred, did I stay calm or did I not stay calm?
It was half.
Okay,
oh,
half
that's
calm.
That's fair, Fred.
I was
worried.
Because okay. I knew that there had to be an explanation. So I started going in the usual places. And then I came into the studio and someone had put them back in back of where we are, where there's like a black velvety thing. Isn't it? Like
So
they blended in because they were black. But thank goodness, because you know how I take things like that, Sue.
Yeah, real well. In stride, as if nothing has happened.
Yeah, well, and nothing has happened. I don't even have my blanket on yet. I have to get my blanket out here because of the chilly temperatures. Sue is at home today doing the show because she's got some personal stuff to take care of. You're off tomorrow, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Let me just say this to you. Moving when it's 9,000 and a half degrees is great.
Not fun, right?
Uh-huh.
I don't know if there. Look, one time I moved literally in the middle of an ice storm. I'm driving a U-Haul. This was way back in like 1990 in Columbia. I still remember fishtailing with the U-Haul on a road trying to get to my new apartment. But yeah, this is no fun either, right? You can't find that happy medium.
No,
maybe,
there is none.
Maybe March would be a good month to move in, but you don't have that choice.
Last time I moved was like in August, maybe 25 years ago. We hired someone to help us move, and I saw probably 7 men without shirts that I didn't want to see.
Yeah, I can believe that. Boy,
they're
all
clothed now, but it's not any better.
I feel like I'm in this period where, thankfully, for this will be going on, I think, 9 years now, 8 years that we haven't moved. Because when I moved back here in 2006, I'd already moved twice in Milwaukee. I moved to an apartment after my divorce and then a condo. So that's twice, right? Moved here into a condo in 2006, then into the house in Holly Hills. That's 4. That's all within like 4 years. Then I moved to, you know, Jeffco Fenton. That's 5. Then I moved to the house I'm in now. So it was like six moves certainly in 16 years or something like that. That's not fun.
I can't do it. I mean, that's way too much. When I left the house to come back here to do this, there was grumbling and mumbling and banging in the basement as Michael was trying to install and get the dryer at the right level. I left at the perfect moment.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, good luck with everything because in any circumstance, no matter what the weather is, I don't think moving is a whole lot of fun. And I'm the kind, you know what I do is like I've really shed all the junk. So the next move that I have, in theory, will be a lot easier because we've done the dumpster thing a couple of times and I have less just stuff than I've ever had before. Right. So that helps it out. Ethan, there's your lesson for the future. Don't accumulate stuff that you're never going to look into or open. I can't even imagine Fred's next move. It's going to be so painful. You're going to need like a psychiatrist and a psychologist just to help you through that.
Listen,
Fred.
Was it last week that Fred, it was when we were talking about the Dr. Laura story and Fred's like just randomly walks in 2 minutes after that first gets discussed. And he has the newspaper from that day when they announced it. I'm like, how do you just have this?
Right, that's a good question.
But Fred is organized in that way. The rest of us are not. Like, I have an entire drawer that's full of kitchen gadgets that you just have to paw through.
Right.
So I'm going to have to get rid of those. A lot of those will go to the alley, but it's a
How about old Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
We have the, maybe everybody does this, but like there's that one kitchen. Actually, I think there's two drawers in the kitchen that just accumulate. This is junk where the pens go and the batteries
junk drawer, gift
cards and all this. And then, eventually I clean it up and I put it in a box. And then the box sits there for months and months and months and nobody does anything. But hey, let me talk about something very happy today in the Reardon household. Oh, my God. School started again for Alexa. Fifth grade started today. I could not be happier. There were some questions about whether or not these kids go to school too early. Some schools started a week ago today. I say, no, keep them in there year-round would be my choice because it gets to be a real hassle with organizing schedules and stuff like that. My wife has been a rock star the past 7 or 8 weeks because it's tough. You don't want them just sitting around on the iPad. And you want to keep them active, so she had some soccer and some volleyball over the weekend, and then some pool time, and she's got volleyball tonight, so now we can get a little structure in the household. Now, mind you, I was just a tad bored this morning. Honestly, there was a point in the mid-morning where I was communicating with Fred, and everything was sort of taken care of, at least for the time being. I'm like, oh my God, what do I do now? I'm so used to, feeding her lunch or getting her lunch going or yelling at her for not brushing her teeth.
Don't worry, I'm sure the 94 pets that you have will keep you busy.
Thank you. I was thinking the same thing, Ethan.
Well, and they have. They do that on a regular basis. Hey, the other thing, Sue, since you're not here, Fred and Ethan can vouch for this. Guess what I did over the weekend? And this actually speaks volumes if you really think about it. And I'll explain here in a second. But
Was it exercise? It
involves something that you predicted that I would stop by June. And you were pretty close, by the way.
Baking cookies.
Yes. Now, can I explain why that's significant?
Yes. Because,
now look, I got this mixer thing last fall. I finally decided the take and bake, Toll House, I'm going to just make my own damn cookies. So I buy the fancy mixer, and I'm rocking it out for months and months and months. And there was a point over the winter when this was getting going. And Sue doesn't get to enjoy the cookies because she's very disciplined on sugar, but everyone else does. And you said, because you know that I'm kind of all in and all out guy, this will last till about June, right?
Uh-huh.
And I was so waiting for you to say something at some point because I had not baked cookies in a while.
Right, a man when he's down.
Well, that's the thing, and this is why it's significant because I'm just keeping it real here. All right, so I was off, and I haven't talked. I don't want to bore people with my mental health. I don't want to talk about it too much, but I will say this: that when I was gone and I had all these days off, when you're in this depressive state in particular, and I was experiencing intense anxiety and depression kind of overlapped, you don't want to do the things that you enjoy doing. Mm. So from about the period when I got back from Greece, which is when all this stuff started kicking in, till this past weekend, I didn't have any interest in baking cookies. Like at one point, my daughter said to me a few weeks ago, Daddy, let's bake cookies. I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe. I mean, I didn't take it upon myself to take it a step further because I just didn't have the will. It's an odd thing. I think people who've had the dark cloud around them before know this. Like, I'm not as into music when I'm in that mode. But, man, I was energized. I had a really good weekend. Last week went very well. It was the first full week back on the air. And I made, I think it was 3 batches of cookies. Some chocolate chip that went very quickly. Then I made some more chocolate chip, different recipe. That's what I brought you guys.
Yeah, it's really good.
And I like my white chunk chocolate macadamia nuts with cranberries. Those are always my favorites. They're not quite as popular around here. I think people see the nuts and everything. They get a little nervous.
I'm a big fan of them.
No, they're good.
I like them.
So that was a big step, Sue, I think, just because it got me in the direction of normalization and doing things that that I enjoy doing. So I had a pretty good weekend. I hope that you guys had a good weekend. Fred and I were at the baseball game on Friday
and
night.
And Ethan.
Ethan, that's right, but we didn't see you. Fred and I were actually hanging out. Okay, hanging. And Fred actually saw, before I even got there, my wife and daughter were there, and they were doing, what was it, like the selfie cam or something
cam.
Like that?
Yeah.
And Alexa and Becky got on that, so that was a lot of fun. The games did not go extremely well this weekend. We got swept by the Yankees. I would say, Ethan, Friday night's game was the closest of the bunch. The Cardinals ended up scoring a fair amount of runs on Saturday's game, and they still got beaten, right? Mm-hmm. And then yesterday, I gave up on yesterday pretty early.
Yesterday, they were tied. Actually, they had the lead going into the, was that the 8th or the 9th? One of the two.
It was tied going into the 9th.
Going into the 9th. And then just an absolute blow up. Bad defense late in the game by the Cardinals. Should have won late yesterday's game. And JoJo Romero got tagged a little bit again. So, there was a world in which the Cardinals took this series. And unfortunately, you could argue at least that they played just as poorly defensively as the Yankees, and the Yankees are known for being a bad defensive team. So the Cardinals are not a good enough team to play bad defense.
They
almost have to play perfect in order to win these kinds of
series. Yeah, it was tied going into the 9th, I think, and then they won.
And then they won 8-4.
They scored 4 in the 9th.
Did Goldie get into taking a bat?
He started yesterday's game.
Oh, he did.
And I think he
singled to start.
Did he pinch hit on Saturday too? I thought he got an app. Maybe he didn't get an app.
Friday he waved from the dugout. You know, he kind of took his hat off and everybody cheered. But I didn't know. I'm telling you, and this is something I love. I've declared my love for the NFL and for football. I've watched an abnormal amount of preseason football just because I'm so excited. I'm watching The Kingdom, which is on Disney Plus and maybe Hulu. That's the show about the Chiefs. You got Hard Knocks on HBO. I mean, Sue has been begging me also to talk about fantasy football. She keeps every day, she's like, Mark, now that you're back, I want you to talk about fantasy football. Can we do like a whole segment or something like that? So I'm working on that, Sue, just so you know. I'm moving in that direction. All right, we have a bunch of, it's interesting, the media coverage from Friday. We left the air Friday, and Ethan, it was like timed out perfectly. I go into audio cut of the day, and Trump starts talking, and Putin from, Anchorage. Now, it wasn't really a news conference. They both made their statements, and then we went into it. I left, actually, and Ethan, candidly, behind the scenes, he's like, I hope this doesn't take all night because of the Q&A, because you needed to get over to the ballpark.
Yeah, I have no shame in saying that.
It could not have worked out better, because they wrapped it up very, very quickly.
You texted me like 6:10. You're like, well, that was ideal.
Yeah,
like,
that worked
it sure
out
well. Was.
But the coverage in how much progress, look, I think what's happening right now is rather remarkable. You know, Trump's able to leave that meeting. Now you've got the Sunday shows picking on him because he said, I'm leaving if there's no ceasefire. There was no ceasefire. But he has the leaders of most of the Western world in a room right now with Zelensky talking about the next steps. We have some great audio from that. We have Batya Ungar-Sargon, who writes for the Free Press and is a wonderful guest on a regular basis, who has kind of dissected some of the coverage from the weekend. Mike Gonzalez from the Heritage Foundation is coming up. We'll have Sue's News on a Monday. This is interesting. Shannon Robinson, who is the director of St. Louis County Supporting Kids and Community Facebook Group, who is always really good at tipping me off on stories, found some interesting decorations at one of our Parkway high schools, which we will highlight. We'll do that. We got Cusimano on a Monday afternoon. All of that and more is coming up this afternoon.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Well, interesting spin from Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation with Marco Rubio yesterday on the Putin meeting and the meeting today.
Well, he's got the leverage over Vladimir Putin if he wanted to crush his economy or at least do more damage to it. But you have held off on those secondary sanctions. President Trump told Fox News his advice to President Zelensky is make a deal. Russia's a very big power and they're not. You know, there is concern from the Europeans that President Zelensky is going to be bullied into signing something away. That's why you have these European leaders coming as backup tomorrow.
That was an interesting allegation. Rubio didn't take very well to that.
Can you?
No, it isn't. That's not why they're coming as backup. That's not true. No, but that's not why. That's not true. They're not coming here tomorrow to keep Zelensky from being bullied. They're not coming.
In fact, they're coming here tomorrow in front of television cameras. Where President Zelensky.
Do you know how many meetings we've had since then?
Yeah, so that went on and on. By the way, Zelensky kind of did wear a suit today. It was a little different. He didn't wear like a tie, but he did look a little different. And that was one of the topics of the news conference. Batya Ungar-Sargon is back with us. She writes at the Free Press, and you see her all over the place on the media. How are you, Batya? Welcome back on this Monday afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel like so super hopeful right now. And, you know, I don't want to jinx anything, but I feel a little bit like it feels like prayers are starting to be answered on the Ukraine front. So it's just like one of those, you know, since Friday, just seeing Donald Trump be able to, like, bend reality to his will has been just utterly amazing to watch. So I'm kind of high off of that. How are you?
I'm good, but I'm with you from this standpoint. I think it's pretty amazing and remarkable. Now, Margaret Brennan and some of the other legacy media, they want to point to the fact that Trump said, well, you know, if there's no ceasefire, I'm walking onto this meeting. But to think that he had the meeting the other day with Putin, they leave. There's obviously some questions. However, there are some interesting things that are said about security guarantees. And then the meeting today with all of the leaders of the Western world sitting down currently in this meeting. We'll see how it goes. The allegation that they are just here to bully Zelensky. I think, you know, how about the allegation that they're here to try to solve this freaking problem finally, right, Batya?
It's so amazing because the media in their hatred of Trump and their, like, need to deny him any victory that is legitimately his have simply been lying since Friday about what's actually happening. And I watch it all day. Like, I have a, you know, the four screen up of, you know, on YouTube TV where you get, you know,
yes,
I've got my CNN, my MSNBC, my CNBC, and then my Fox. And it's just astonishing how, so throughout the entire coverage of Friday, they missed the most important part of the story, which was that Putin agreed to security guarantees for Ukraine, which means that essentially this could be over very quickly. I mean, when Trump in the Oval Office with Zelensky 6 months ago got so angry at him, it was part of it was over this. So huge, huge roadblock cleared away through the sheer force of Donald Trump's personality. They missed the fact that Putin was in, like, complete obsequious mode. Like, we have not seen this version of Putin in 20 years. I mean, just basically sitting there with this goofy grin on his face, doing his best to put Donald Trump at his ease, to flatter him. It was very obvious who the top dog was there, but the media, of course, completely reversed that. Just basically lying about what happened and then not reporting that the major stumbling block to peace had been removed. So it was like crazy watching the media, like watching the news all day yesterday and just watching the Sunday shows, just trying to spin a totally false narrative. And then the same thing today, you hear them like just hoping beyond hope that Trump starts yelling at Zelensky. Like, they really would rather the killing go on for 10 more years than Trump get the Nobel Peace Prize. But I really think that he's, I mean, today Zelensky admitted for the first time that he was open to territorial concessions. I mean, do you know what that means? It's astonishing what Donald Trump has pulled off here. And he is the only person on planet Earth who could have done that, which is why all of the European leaders were there, basically the same people who laughed in his face for years were sitting there saying, President Trump, you opened the door.
Something.
President
yeah.
Trump, you made this happen. It was astonishing to watch.
So why I'm a little confused on the security guarantees from this perspective. Why would he agree to some of that? Because obviously Ukraine wants to be a NATO country. That's been ruled off the table, I think, even by President Trump. But some of the security guarantees are very NATO-like if you would have to enforce them, right?
It's a great question. I've been asking myself that the whole time because I thought this was off the table because, you know, 6 months ago when Zelensky was saying we need security guarantees, Trump's answer was kind of like, that's what NATO is and you cannot join NATO, like, or this will never end. So here's my thinking about it. I think the Donbass is incredibly important to Putin in terms of going back to his people and saying, look, we got what we came for. It turns out that's much more important to him than, you know, he wants to be able to say, look, I started this war over Ukraine not being in NATO. I started it over the civil war in the Donbass. These were our people, Russians, fighting for their sovereignty. You know, I started it over, you know, recognition of Crimea as Russia. That, and he has maintained throughout that he will pull out his troops immediately if he can get those three things. So it turns out from his point of view, okay, you want to station some peacekeepers along this border. I think from his point of view, if he can get that rim of the Donbass that he has not yet conquered before the Ukrainian flatlands, he's willing to accept that that gives him this very unfair advantage militarily and thus to accede to some sort of security force there.
So the on the on the land and the territorial swaps, there was an interesting map. I actually took a picture of it. It was up on one of those screens that you were watching earlier today on Fox, and they showed the Donbas region. They showed how much, you know, Russia has control. That's essentially the eastern part, or I guess maybe the southeastern part of Ukraine, is where the Russians really kind of control more of the territories. But there's this little area near either Luhansk or Donetsk that he really wants, that he does not have control over. Why is that area so important? Do you know?
Yeah, so that area is it's very hilly. And on the other side of it towards Ukraine, so the Ukraine that's on the other side, I mean, that's still part of Ukraine, but on the other side of it, to the west, is all flatland. It's all farmland. So the thinking is that is whoever controls that, you know, mountainous ridge in the Donbas has the military upper hand in that region. It's an extremely important part. Now, the Donbas region, more generally, about 80% of it are ethnic Russians. And before Putin invaded Ukraine, there was a civil war there because they had declared independence from Ukraine. They had seceded after the Maidan 2014 revolution, the Ukrainians basically, you know, they had this revolution in which they kicked out their pro-Russian president. And, you know, so in opposition to that, these Russian ethnics in the Donbas region, in Donetsk and Luhansk, declared themselves an independent republic of Donetsk and Luhansk. And so that's, you know, 80% of the Donbas region. Basically, Putin, after he invaded, then basically about a year into the war, he said, okay, now this whole area, you're no longer an independent republic, you're part of Russia. Mm-hmm. And for most of the people living there, they're probably fine with that because they are ethnic Russians. So it's very complicated. There were Minsk Accords that were supposed to be, you know, a general cessation of hostilities between the Kiev government and then the Russian-backed separatists in Donetsk. But, you know, according to the separatists, Zelensky had already, violated those Minsk Accords. Yeah.
There were interesting reporting. Jackie Heinrich said this. I'm told there, and this makes sense, by the way, I'm told there's no expectation that today wraps up with a date on the calendar for a trilateral summit, but today would be a success if Zelensky had a realistic discussion about territorial concessions. And then she said nobody expects Zelensky to take Putin's first version of the map back to his country, but he needs to talk about what he can let go and what is critical to keep, and then, of course, getting the clarity on the security guarantees. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but to get everyone in the room like this, and maybe you hope that this meeting lasts for a long time and it doesn't bust out, you know, early this afternoon, that might mean that there's progress being made. So look, there is a realistic chance at peace here, and I think that that's the goal. Of course, the other side says, well, the only reason he's doing any of this, including the DC crime stuff, is because of the Epstein tapes. Botcha. It's all about politics, right?
I just think that is such...
It's ridiculous.
Yes.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Such BS. Trump doesn't care about Epstein. His voters don't care about Epstein. The only people who care about Epstein are the people on MSNBC and CNN who are trying to keep it alive because they think it hurts Trump. And, you know, like Ro Khanna, you know, a bunch of like Democrat Congress people who, when they controlled the files, like didn't do anything about it. Nobody cares about this. Like a bunch of podcasters on the right cared about it because they make money off of content.
Thank you.
No one cares about this.
I'm so glad to hear you say that because I've been very confused about that. Batya Ongar-Sargon, always great to have you. Thank you so much. You have a great week.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Jackie Heinrich had a pretty good breakdown here before they all went into this meeting. You know, basically, and I ran down a couple of them with Batya. One of the important things for Zelensky is getting clarity on the security guarantees, what they might look like, you know, because then that will be easier to sell to the folks back home. Asked about what it means for the timeline. I'm told, this is Jackie's reporting, that the U.S. feels that there is political energy behind this, a light at the end of the tunnel. It wants to get it done, but knows it won't be instant, more like weeks, not months, and Ukraine understands this. She says U.S. and Europeans have gently made suggestions on territory, but they are also aware that Zelensky has to take this back and, you know, massage it through his own system. Got to come back with a counteroffer. Jackie says, I asked how Zelensky is approaching that, given Ukraine's constitutional requirement of a national referendum for territorial changes. She says, I'm told the general attitude is that that's a you problem, as in up to Zelensky to figure it out and handle. And then on territory with minerals being under Russian control, basically, if America has a stake in land, it is a security in and of itself. It's in their interest to make it work. And she kind of goes on and on about some of the other stuff that they're trying to, get wrapped up. For example, one part of the discussion on security guarantees won't produce full security plans today, but they want to clear the next steps to work on. So this is a big meeting today, and it's certainly something that we're going to keep an eye on throughout the afternoon. My expectation would be this meeting's not going to break unless they just break for a break instead of just concluding it, because they went in not too long ago, and it will likely take many hours. But we'll track it. We'll have the latest on Fox News at the top of the hour as well. Mike Gonzalez is back with us. He's a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and he's written a book called BLM, The Making of a New Marxist Revolution. How are you, Mike? Welcome back to the show on this Monday.
Hey, Mark, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. I can hear you. Very good. Well, thank you. I know you're probably a very busy guy. By the way, on the BLM front, I thought this was interesting. There was a piece in our local paper. We had a devastating tornado here in the spring that hit many parts of the low-income, area of St. Louis, North St. Louis, where you saw a predominant, influx of BLM signs, et cetera, in the aftermath of Mike Brown and George Floyd, et cetera. Somebody asked the question, where's BLM now? In the aftermath of something like that, you don't hear from them very much when other people are affected, when cops aren't involved, do you?
No, I mean, BLM has gone through a lot of shifts. The main BLM group, which is the global network, that one has pretty much gone on the ground. You don't hear from them anymore. The most radical, which is BLM LA, BLM Grassroots, and BLM Chicago, they're still around making noise, but no, they took in the hundreds of millions of dollars of money that good Americans with white guilt gave them, and bad Americans who knew what they were doing. They just wanted to split society, and corporations who just wanted to buy peace, and then they spent it on themselves, a lot of it. What we're seeing, let me explain this to you, in the demonstrations that we're seeing against Israel, the demonstrations we're seeing against ICE, this is a morphing of the same people, the same money, the same organizers, the same fiscal sponsors, the same funders. So this is the new iteration of that. They graft onto anything to destabilize society and our cities to break up America.
Mike, last week I played some pretty amazing audio from Jillian Michaels, of all people. She was on one of the CNN panels late at night with Abby Phillip, and they were talking about, and I guess it was a piece in the New York Times and some of the other legacy media. For example, the New York Times headline was, "Historians Alarmed by White House Plan to Oversee Smithsonian Exhibits." The Trump administration's plan to, in effect, audit the content of the Smithsonian Museum drew criticism from groups that represent scholars and promote free speech. The way that it was presented on CNN by Jillian and others the other night was, well, what we're trying to do is kind of de-wokeify the Smithsonian, where all they want to do is blame white people for everything that's happened in this country and not really guide people through history as much as blame, colonialism and oppression and all this other stuff, or colonization, rather. So it was interesting. You wrote about this. What are they trying to do at the Smithsonian to clean things up a little bit, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get stuff that doesn't come out till late to midweek in my weekly column in the Examiner. I'm writing about this again. What Trump is doing is basically liberating the Smithsonian, or trying to, and museums in general. After the news came out of the review, this is a very good review. The letter was sent by Lindsey Halligan, the special advisor to the president, by Vince Haley, the head of domestic policy, and by Russ Boat, the head of OMB, to Ronnie Bunch, the director of the Smithsonian, saying that they were going to put the Smithsonian under review. They're going to conduct a review. Basically, what they're saying is they're going to put the Smithsonian under adult supervision. Now, the New York Times and everyone else, and the piece I quoted me, by the way, the New York Times, so they had a lot of historians saying, this is outrageous. This is only curators and collectors should be able to conduct an interview review. And I went back and I spent a weekend looking at this, and it turns out that every job description having to do with museums, whether it's curators, whether it's collectors, whether it's restorers, they're like 95% liberal. And almost no conservatives, like maybe 2 or 3% conservative. This is ideological capture. The woke have captured the museum industry. In fact, I tell you again, I'm breaking news here. Hillsdale, which, as you know, Hillsdale College, a premier conservative college in the country, they considered opening a museum studies department, and they desisted from the idea because they realized that their graduates would not be hired by museums because the liberals are hiring each other. And that's how the ideological capture takes place. And the reason they do it is to decolonize museums, to wokeify them. So Trump wants to liberate these museums. That's all.
You know, it's interesting. You brought up an example of Angela Davis, who is a radical, a former Black Panther. She is the recipient of the Soviet Union's Lenin Peace Prize, who once was accused of supplying weapons to a Black supremacist who went on to murder a Supreme Court judge and a couple other people. She gets several exhibits in the Smithsonian, and Clarence Thomas gets nothing? Is that accurate?
Yeah, he got nothing at the African American National Museum, the Museum of African American History and Culture. And then when people complain, I think he got an exhibit at the Museum of National History. What I hear, and this I've not confirmed, is that Obama had the Smithsonian not give, because Obama hates, when Obama was president, when this museum opened, he used his influence to make sure that Clarence Thomas did not get anything. But even without the Clarence Thomas aspect, for Angela Davis to get 4 exhibits for Stokely Carmichael, who wanted to make the civil rights movement violent, for these people to get, and then one of the legends on the one of the Angela Davis exhibits said, you were guilty of nothing but being a Black woman to the core. No. She was guilty of many things. She was guilty of procuring the gun, which terrorists killed the judge. She was guilty of running for the Communist Party ticket in the 80s twice. The communism has produced 100 million debt. She was guilty of being a stooge for the Soviet Union, for East Germany, for the worst regimes behind the Iron Curtain. For heaven's sakes, is this somebody? Is this a lodestar for our young to look up to? Is this what our nation should be looking up to? According to the Smithsonian,
yeah,
it is.
Well, that's what the curators want. Here's something else interesting, and I'm very happy about this, because one of the things that I expressed last year during the election was the horror that perhaps Kamala Harris and her team would be guiding our great nation through its 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Next year, a great, great celebration is being planned. They're requesting, though, this team that's looking at the Smithsonian, they want an index of all permanent holdings as well as documents relevant to the 250th anniversary programming and what they're going to do. And I kind of like that, because I'd like to see people come into the Smithsonian and appreciate the greatness and the freedom that this country has afforded people for 250 years. With the current leadership group, I don't think you're assured of that, which is why they're asking for some of this material very wisely.
But, well, Mark, I don't think you're old enough, but I certainly am, to remember 76.
I remember it. Of course I do. I was 11 years old. Yeah.
The country was so happy,
yes,
and so proud of America, and that we would not get again if Donald Trump would not be elected. So I think, yeah, no, we have to make sure this is a great country. For heaven's sakes, what are we talking about? We need to be proud of being Americans. We need to know the bad parts of it. Obviously, we need to know the bad history and how by striving to live up to our ideals, we solve the problems. We need to know all that, but we need to be, you know, a country, a liberal democracy that forgets who it is and that does not have loyal citizens will not last very long, Mark, I tell you that.
Yeah, well, that's why next year is so important. And yes, I do remember the bicentennial. I remember riding my bike around as a kid with, you know, the bike decorated in red, white, and blue and all those fun things we used to do. So that's why next year is very important to me. And I want it to be important for my daughter, who will be exactly the same age as I was in 1976. Mike Gonzalez, always great to have you on. I hope you get on that flight okay. We'll talk soon. Have a great week.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, Bye. Take care. You know, I love Jen Say from XXXY Athletics. She's been one of the most vocal, along with Riley Gaines, you know, outspoken people on some of the trans nonsense out there. And she already has an Emmy award-winning documentary called Athlete A on the Larry Nassar stuff, because Jen was an award-winning and a U.S. champion gymnast. So that's out there on Netflix, Athlete A. But there's another film that is called Generation COVID, and Andrew James is the co-director of the film. I think this is so important, you know, in the era that we're in with politics and certainly with Trump, some of the things that go back to, you know, what happened with COVID. And it's interesting for me because 5 years ago, I was helping teach kindergarten as my daughter was not able to go back in person to Rockwood when she started. And that was quite the experience. And these kids are behind. And that's why I always mention David Zweig's book, An Abundance of Caution. I don't know if David is featured in the film. We'll ask because Andrew, the co-director, is going to come on after 5 o'clock. John Seiler, who is the director of higher education policy and a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, has some more stuff on DEI and the Justice Department cracking down on universities. So that's coming up. I do think that there is a dramatic, I mean a dramatic tone difference between the meeting today that we saw with Zelensky and Trump in the Oval Office. It was very, very cool heads prevailing compared to what happened 6 months ago.
You've allowed yourself to be in a very bad position, and he happens to be right about it.
From the very beginning of the war,
you're not in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
cards.
Right now, you don't. You're playing cards,
Mr. President.
You're playing cards. You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III.
So that was one of the most amazing things that we had ever really seen in the Oval Office, and there was a lot of criticism of it at the time. So here he is back in the Oval Office today. They're all in this meeting, you know, with Macron and Keir Starmer and the rest of the leaders of Europeans West. And here's what he said today.
We had very good conversation with President Trump.
Very good.
And it really was the best one. Maybe the best one will be in the future. But it was really good. And we spoke about very sensitive points. The first one is security guarantees. And we are very happy with President that all the leaders are here. And the security in Ukraine depends on the United States and on you and on those leaders who are with us. In our hearts, they have been online before yesterday, and etc. So a lot of countries on the side of Ukraine, our people, and all of us want to finish this war, stop Russia, stop this war. We spoke about it, and we will speak more about security guarantees. This is very important that the United States gives such strong signal and is ready for security guarantees.
Yeah, so that was a big part of what happened Friday. Baccia was commenting on that earlier this hour. By the way, you know, I mentioned, you know, he kind of wore a suit. He wasn't dressed down as much as he usually does, especially, you know, when he's with Trump or in some of these meetings.
President Zelensky, you look fabulous in that suit.
I said the same thing.
Yeah, you look good.
I said the same thing.
Yeah, looks good on you.
I said someone that attacked you last time. Yeah. See, now he's
I remember that.
Yeah, I apologize to you. You look wonderful. No, my first question for you, President Zelensky.
In the same suit.
I think he said that was the reporter that kind of called him out the last time, and then he apologized, but that was kind of a moment of levity at the meeting this morning. Let me circle back to Marco Rubio with Margaret Brennan, because Brennan essentially makes the allegation that the only reason that Keir Starmer and the Italian prime minister and, you know, everyone, Macron, et cetera, I can't remember the guy from Canada, the new guy, why are they there? Well, Margaret Brennan at Face the Nation says it's just to make sure that Trump doesn't bully Zelensky.
Can you?
No, it isn't. That's not why they're coming us back. That's not true. No, but that's not why. That's not true. They're not coming here tomorrow to keep Zelensky from being bullied. They're
well,
not coming.
February, in fact, they're coming here tomorrow in front of television cameras. Where President Zelensky.
Do you know how many meetings we've had since then?
Oh, no, I know. And I was just up in Alaska watching the one with Vladimir Putin where a red carpet rolled
out. No, but
it was
Zelensky. We've had more meetings. We've had one meeting with Putin and like a dozen meetings with Zelensky. So, but that's not true. They're not coming here tomorrow to keep Zelensky from being bullied. They're coming here tomorrow because we've been working with the Europeans. We talked to them last week. There were meetings in the UK over the previous weekend.
And they said President Trump was going
to
demand a ceasefire.
As early as Thursday. No. But you said that they're coming here tomorrow to keep Zelensky from being bullied. They're not coming here tomorrow. Oh, this is such a stupid media narrative that they're coming here tomorrow.
Yes, it is.
Because Trump is going to bully Zelensky into a bad deal. We've been working with these people for weeks on this stuff. They're coming here tomorrow because they chose to come here tomorrow. We invited them to come. We invited them to come. The president invited them to come.
Look, this is maybe there's some parallels that I would say with the D.C. takeover, because quietly, you even have more of this today where I can play some of the audio later. You got Joe Scarborough and others saying, yeah, you know what? The people that live in Washington, D.C., they welcome this, what Trump's doing, because they know how dangerous it's gotten. But then they say something else behind the scenes. In this particular situation, I think Margaret Brennan and many of the legacy media folks, they're terrified that Trump's actually going to get something done here, because then where do their talking points go? But the meeting is ongoing. It started a couple hours ago. We'll have the very latest on Fox News. Sue's News coming up right after that this afternoon on a Monday edition of The Mark Reardon Show.
Get more at 971talk.com.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.